Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM.
Let's focus on the stories of the week. Bernard Jackman is with us for our regular Thursday night chat. Bernard, how are you?
Very good, thank you, Damien.
Good to talk to you, thanks as always. I suppose the place to start, we will have plenty of chat between now and the 11th of May about the Heineken Champions Cup final, but Jerome Garcés named as the referee today. Is that one that's going to have alarm bells ringing around UCD when Leinster got the news filtering through?
Well, I think they'll definitely be spending a huge amount of time analysing him. I think he's a referee who lets a lot go to breakdown. And I think that's something that Leinster will be very conscious of and be, I suppose, making sure that they get the key messages to him before the game. But he's a good referee. He doesn't get rattled by the occasion, and it's obviously going to be a huge occasion. So I think he's a good choice for this game, and he does let things go. So I don't think on both sides. So I think both teams will the most aggressive team, the guys who I suppose win the race first at the breakdown, generally get the rubber to green from them. So both teams will be setting up that way.
In terms of how you formulate your game plan for that game in Newcastle, how much of it is dictated by the referee? How much of it in the week of the game will be Jerome Garcés minded?
No, not very much, to be honest. The players will generally have a ref preview at some stage during the week, and they look at some stats around his trends. They look at some clips, usually around set piece, offside line, mainly around his communication. So the ref mic is key, particularly for those players who like to try and slow the ball down to break down or be jackal threats. So they'll be looking to see what kind of communication he gives, if he gives any, how long he tends to give you, you know, when he tells you to release before you release, because that can, if you can buy an extra half a second there, that'll give your defensive line you know, time to set. And referees are creatures of habit, so they generally won't change very much. The only thing is you have to be careful of is if he's had a very harsh review from his previous game, which will be his last game in Europe, and then potentially there's going to be a bit of a change in his habits. But you know, the players be very aware of what he likes, doesn't like. But having after that, then it'll up to be the captain. It'll be up to Leo and Stuart to make sure they send the right clips to the European head referees, get feedback on that, and then you know the rest of it will be about imposing Leinster's game plan, you know, with and without the ball, to try and, I suppose, beat Saracens.
There's been a lot of focus on Jonathan Sexton and his relationship with referees, and it's not something that I necessarily want to go over again, but irrespective of who the captain is, irrespective of who the team is, it is a part of the captain's week, presumably, how a referee likes to be addressed, how often they want to be spoken to, how they want to be spoken to, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah, for sure. And the great thing about someone like Johnny with his experiences and is that he's had Jerome Garcés many times, whether it's at international level or European level, and with Leinster, and that's great. He will already have a very good idea about, you know, how he likes to be treated, whether it's been Johnny as captain or Johnny just being on the field. And there's a familiarity with those top class refs, with the top sides who get to the knockout stages of Europe and who have a lot of players playing international rugby. So there's already a relationship there, and I don't think he will be he's not a wild card. I mean, he's someone who's been around the highest levels for a long time, and I think he's more than capable of doing a great job in the final and not be mentioned afterwards. You know, hopefully we've got two brilliant teams, and I'd like to hope and I believe that after the game we're talking about the quality of rugby that both sides played, and you know, who's the fitting champions of Europe.
Yeah, and perhaps there might be a phone call to Munster at some stage over the next couple of weeks to get a bit of feedback on how they experienced.
Yeah, I think so. On that game, I think like definitely. I think he was quite lenient to Saracens around the offside line and the breakdown. So that's why I said his last game, it'll be interesting to see what his review was like and what the feedback he got, because that could change his habits. He'll probably go back to top 14 and he'll referee as he normally does, but there is a different feedback system from Europe, because it's obviously a different competition. So potentially from the Munster Saracens game, there may be some really interesting items from that they can either, you know, learn from or find out that, you know, he was told afterwards that he was a little bit lenient on in those areas, and he's going to be harder than that in this final.
Just, and we will chat no doubt an awful lot more in advance of that game taking place, but just how finely balanced this far out from that European final do you consider it to be, or who at the moment do you think is the favourite?
It's not, to be honest, after the Saracens Munster game, I found it hard to see who could beat Munster or Saracens, just how impressive they were in that game. And even though, you know, the score was tied at half time, you just felt, you know, if Saracens could keep that level of physicality up in the second half, the game was going to go fall in their favour. And I just thought they were incredibly impressive. And because Leinster had, it wasn't a dip, they hadn't had their best players playing together since January, but, you know, we hadn't seen the type of performance we saw Sunday against Toulouse. And I suppose, you know, I definitely was thinking, wow, Leinster are going to have to really up it to get to that level that Saracens are at. But I do think, having seen what we saw against Toulouse, it was a very complete performance. And I think Leinster have more in them again. I think they'll be even better by the time the final comes around. And they can live with Saracens' power. They have the athletes, they have the X factor. You know, we can't forget that Munster were missing Carberry and Earls, who are probably the two players in their back line who are most likely to, I suppose, create something. And that's, you need that against Saracens. I think that's why James Lowe will probably have to play. You know, Robbie Henshaw being back, and Larmer, they're two players, or three players, who can make things happen. And you need that against Saracens, because if you try and meet them head on, power v power, I don't think there's anyone in Europe that can beat them at that. But Leinster have other strings to their bow. They're incredibly fit. They're technically and tactically very sound, and they have players who can, you know, make magic moments happen. So I think it'll be finely balanced, and I think over the next couple of weeks, it depends on who gets to look at a balance in terms of injuries. You know, if Leinster can keep their key men fit, I think they can go and win.
Just a word on this weekend with that in mind. It's obviously, it's a dead rubber of a game from a Leinster and Ulster perspective in terms of their advancement and their placings within the knockout stages of the Pro 14 are done. But surely Leo Cullen must look around that dressing room and think to himself, is there a bit of a balancing act between getting game time into, you know, maybe your Devon Toners, Robbie Henshaw's, Jonathan Sexton, in light of the fact that there's a down week the following week?
Yeah, I think you will. I think you would definitely they'll assess where everyone's at. I think what Leinster have is massive experience of understanding how to get those players ready for big games. And it's probably a little bit different than other clubs where the tendency is to play them. Leinster seem to trust the player management programme incredibly well. And you saw, you know, you saw how cohesive they were able to be against Toulouse, despite the fact that against Benetton and Glasgow, the two previous games, they didn't have, you know, all their main guys playing. So I think Leo will take no risks for this game. They've a beautiful cushion that they've worked incredibly hard for all year to guarantee them that top seed. And I think players who need to play will go, but he's well capable of putting together, a non-first-choice 15 and go up there and put in a great performance and maybe even win. That's how strong their depth is.
And from, you know, a lot of focus, or maybe all the focus from an Irish perspective this weekend is going to be on Munster themselves. Glasgow and Connacht all guaranteed advancement from Conference A. Glasgow 76 points, Munster 73 points. Munster host Connacht, Glasgow face Edinburgh. So Munster have no real choice but to go out fully stacked, try and get a win, try and get a bonus point, and hope it's enough to secure a home semi-final.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a tricky fixture for Glasgow. Edinburgh have a huge amount to play for as well, and they'll be hoping, obviously, that Edinburgh get the win there. But I think for Munster, regardless, you know, they'll be very disappointed with obviously not losing another semi-final. And the most important thing for them is, in front of their home fans, to go out, get a real positive performance, and then, you know, that'll sling them into obviously knockout rugby. And if it's good enough to get them a home semi, you know, it's hugely important in terms of increasing their chances of going through to a final, obviously increasing their revenue, and it's just hype, you know, really important that they get back now and show the form for their own confidence level as well. I mean, that must have been a hard defeat for them, given how dominated they were, and like, it took a huge effort for Munster to stay competitive in that game, I felt. And they'll want to get back to Pro 14 now and try and, I suppose, get some silverware this season. They're capable of doing it. You know, Munster are a good side, and they're just a little bit unlucky that they ran into Saracens, who were, you know, red hot on the day.
And it, you know, it's interesting. We had Conor Murray on the program, must be what, 2-3 weeks ago now, speaking at length and talking about all that they've achieved with Ireland. But yet, all he has to show for his Munster career is a Pro 12 medal from, was it 2011, 2012. So you look at Keith Earls, was part of the European squad in 2008, but because he didn't get game time in the final, I think he's quite publicly said he doesn't consider it to be a medal that he owns. And a lot of them, surely they must be looking around thinking, we've now lost 7 European semi-finals on the bounce, that the Pro 14 has to be our most likely route for silverware before we hang up this red jersey.
Yeah, I think so, and I think it's a huge competition to win in its own right. It's your domestic competition, but it will give them, if they can win it, give them massive belief then to go and try and, you know, pass through that semi-final barrier, which they're kind of stuck at the moment. Listen, being beaten in a semi-final in Europe is still a good achievement. I mean, the quality that's in that competition now across England and France in particular is incredible. So Munster aren't far away. They just obviously run into some heavyweights at the wrong time. But I do think if they can win a Pro 14, that's obviously going to be a big thing for the players you mentioned, for the fans. But I do think then it can help them go further in Europe as soon as they do it.
Okay, just in terms of the new format, the expanded nature of the advancement, like it really is paying off for the Pro 14 this year, that we got down to the final weekend. There's still an awful lot at stake, and I'm sure from a neutral's perspective, how great it would be to see Benetton advance to the knockout stages, and perhaps how great it would be for the competition for an Italian side to have some level of breaking through a glass ceiling.
Oh, absolutely. I think that would be huge, and they deserve to be there because they've been incredibly consistent all year. They've won points, picked up points during November and during the Six Nations, where, you know, they've been decimated with call-ups to Italy, and be a massive squad effort. I thought the bravery they showed a couple of weeks ago in the RDS typified the type of team spirit and the mental toughness and the togetherness they have. So I would love to see them in it, and I think, to be honest, like, they are well respected in the Pro 14 now amongst all the teams, and if they were in the knockout stages, they're certainly no gimme.
Okay, but you look at where the two Italian sides are at. So Benetton, 52 points. They've had like 10 wins, 5 try bonus points, 3 losing bonus points. So it's been a season that's been stacked up with impressive victories. But, you know, Zebre, 3 wins, 17 losses. So overall, Italian rugby needs a little bit more than one strong team and one team that's firmly there to make up the numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think it'll happen. I think the biggest issue for Michael Bradley and Zebre is funding. I mean, they're the union sponsored team, whereas Treviso have a combination of private money, some better sponsors, plus their allocation from the union. So their spend is bigger, and it's not a surprise that they're higher up the table than Zebre. The teams who spend the least amount of money this year are going to finish the bottom four. So I think that's the issue for Italian rugby, is to, they've seen now, at least they've actually, there's proof that if you get the right coach and staff and you get the right spend on your squad, it's possible to be up in the top half of the Pro 14. Then Treviso are the example of that, but they now need to get behind Zebre to the same extent, because Michael Bradley's got a very difficult task with a squad that doesn't really have the quality in the starting team or the depth that Treviso have, and I actually think it's a good thing for Zebre, because they can now go to the union and say, look, if you give us extra funding, you know, that's what's capable of, and that's what Conor Shea or whoever becomes the next Italian coach needs. He needs two teams who are at the top. You look at Gregor Townsend, you know, Glasgow and Edinburgh are both competitive this year, but it hasn't translated into, bar, you know, a great second half against England, a squad that's capable of doing great things at the Six Nations level, and they've got good coaches. So it's a minimum to have two teams who are capable of being the top half of Pro 14. I think that's what Italian rugby needs to chase.
Okay, we'll see how it all plays out this weekend. Bernard, thanks for joining us as always.
Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Over 100 years, Gillette has stood with men through early mornings, late evenings, and everything in between. Gillette, the best a man can get.